This is Making Stitches, and today it's Christmas Eve, a time which crafters look forward to and dread in equal measure, depending on how big their to-do list still is.
I'd like to do a few hats and some cowls that I bought some nice yarn for Christmas gifts.
I'm knitting a little jumper for my niece's little girl, a little Christmas Eve jumper. And I've knitted another little jumper for my niece's little boy, little baby Santa jumper.
Well, I've actually finished most of my things, I think. I've just made a few quick chunky cowls for people, and I usually get a couple of hats out of the way. And that's it, really. I don't make anything too big and tricky. But then we've just launched a new little Christmas box for making decorations, so I'll probably join in with a few of those, make some pretty little bits for the tree.
I would like to finally finish the Christmas designs, because it's very late, and I did realise that about a month ago I said to someone, I'll go on my Etsy shop by the end of the week and the Christmas cards will be on there, and they're still not.
Hello and welcome to Making Stitches, and a very happy Christmas to you. I'm Lindsay, and it's been a real joy to have your company throughout this last year of 2021 on the podcast. Last Christmas, I pulled together a Stitchmas special featuring a selection of last year's podcast highlights, as well as some listener stitch stories too. Well, that episode became the most listened to episode of all time on the podcast, so I thought I'd have another go at it this year. But this time it's going to be a little bit different. It's coming in two parts. The first part today on Christmas Eve, and the second part next Friday, which is New Year's Eve, when we'll look ahead to next year and our crafty New Year's resolutions. Well, 2021 kicked off on the podcast in January with a chat I had with Sarah Huntington, editor of Simply Crochet magazine, who really amazed me with the way she stuck to her guns and followed her heart towards the craft that made her happiest. It changed the direction of her life from working 4 days a week in a job which didn't fill her with joy.
I didn't really enjoy the job that much, and I had to get the train sometimes punishingly early. I think I used to have to get on the 5:41.
Ooh.
I know, to London, and sometimes three or four times a week. Anyway, so to get me through it, because I'd get on a train with all these men who basically unclip their briefcases and bring out their papers and whatnot, and I was just, oh, I can't, you know, it's too early for me. So I just thought, well, I'll take my knitting and crochet. So I started doing that, and I was just churning out the projects because I was doing so much travelling, and that was fantastic. And then I was thinking, you know, what am I doing with my life? What's happening? And I thought, well, what you have to do is focus on what really makes you happy. What is it that really makes you happy? And I thought, well, creating things makes me happy. And specifically, making things with yarn makes me happy. So I'm just going to focus on that. And if I put that out there and think about that, and if an opportunity comes my way to do with something like that, I'm going to say yes. I'm not going to think twice about it. And I remember that was a very conscious decision. I thought, how can I change the trajectory of my life? Well, I'll just say yes to the things that I want to say yes to. So shortly after that, there was a new yarn shop opened up near us called Woolbath. It's a really lovely shop. And they were having, they were doing knit-alongs and things like that. So I went along and she said, oh, do you want to be in a magazine with one of your projects? So I said, yes, because I had to. And we ended up, I think they were just doing a focus on knitting groups and stuff. So I had one of my projects in then. And I started going to the knitting group regularly. Then I got, because I was there regularly, they'd say, well, do you want to work in the shop? I worked in the shop one day a week. Do you want to start teaching? I did that. And it was all making me very happy. And then when we were in the shop, I was working there one day a week. I worked 4 days a week and I had a day off, but I chose to work in Woolbath. I absolutely loved it. And all the people from the magazines used to come in and get their yarn, so I got to know them all. And really, that's sort of how it happened. And I started designing for them. That's how I really got to know everybody. And then ended up getting the commissioning editor and then editor's job.
Wow! Yeah. It sounds like you're living your dream then.
Well, I was. I mean, it was quite amazing. I remember my husband, because I was basically trying. trying to do my 4-day a week job and do designing two projects a month for the magazine. I was under the kids and everything. I was a bit busy. And I remember my husband saying to me, why are you doing this? And I'm working the shop. And he said, why are you doing this? And I said, I don't know, but there's definitely a reason. I feel like I'm on some kind of path. There's definitely a reason I'm doing it. I had no idea what it was. I had no idea that it was going to take me into the magazine or anything like that. I just knew that I had to do it, and I was really enjoying it, and that was really important. I did everything else just to sort of live, and the yarn stuff was what was making me happy. So, yeah, so I knew it was sort of going somewhere, and it did.
I think we can all take a leaf out of Sarah's book and focus on things that make us happy. You never know where it might lead. This year on Making Stitches, I've been fortunate that a few TV stars said yes to my request for an interview. The first was Ginny, whose real name is Louise Armitage. You may remember that last year on the TV show Kirsty's Handmade Christmas, Ginny won the handmade decoration episode with her stunning Dorset buttons. She spoke to me about how she was first introduced to the heritage craft, how she's developed her skills over the years, and how she ended up doing it on telly.
When Kirsty did her lockdown show, you know, the Keep Crafting one, I sent some photos into that, and my Dorset buttons got on there as features on the programme. I'm like, oh, we didn't realise. We were just watching. They didn't tell me they were going to be on. We were literally watching the show, and they just popped up. And all three of us, me, my daughter, and my husband, jumped up like, oh, they're on the show. Oh. We just freaked out. I'm like, oh, if they like them, maybe I should go on the Christmas show. Oh, right. That was my motivation. I thought, right, okay, I'm definitely going to apply this year. I'm going to do it. So I did. I applied. And they phoned me back straight away and said, we absolutely love it. We love the idea. We really, really want you to go on the show. They particularly liked the backstory, and they loved that it was a traditional craft. They wanted to know all about it, all the background. They kept phoning me and wanted to know more detail and stuff. So I think they were really, really interested. They just loved that it was so different. Yeah, they'd never heard of it before. So they were really interested. So, yeah, lots of phone calls. And yeah, I was straight on the show, so that's brilliant. We didn't realise, but when I got there, it was so different. It's not like it was should have been, you know. We were, you get there and you're not allowed out your car until you've done your temperature, and you know you've got your mask on and you're sanitised, and then you're led by one person to a separate tent, and it was so, you know, spaced out, and you're not allowed to meet the other contestants from the other bits, and it was different. It was, but we still had a fantastic time. When we got there, we were looked after one person, and he said, you've no idea how incredibly lucky you are to actually get this far, because this year, obviously everybody's in lockdown, there were literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people that applied. There were so many. And he said it's literally taken us months to go through all the applicants because there were so many. Because everybody's in lockdown. Everybody's crafting. And so everybody applied.
Yeah.
So it was incredible to get on. Yes, that was really surprising. So I didn't realise how lucky I was actually to get on in the first place. So I was very, very grateful.
Yeah.
So a win for Dorset Buttons, definitely. Yeah.
Well, in both senses of the word. Yes.
Yes, actually, yeah. I know, I'm still a bit, like, shocked. It's still surreal. I can't quite sort of grasp that I've won. Yeah.
You did look, you looked genuinely shocked when it was announced.
I was absolutely gobsmacked. I did not in any way think I didn't think I was getting on the show. And no way did I think I was going to win. Absolutely not. No, it was a total utter shock, no. I just went through the whole programme assuming that it won't be me. I'm just happy to be on here, you know. I'm just enjoying myself, you know. I'm happy crafting, doing my Dorset buttons. Never thought that I would win. Oh, my God, no. No, not at all. I'm really, really shocked. That was a proper shock. And I absolutely burst into tears after that moment. I was proper floods of tears. Like, oh, my God. It's just hilarious afterwards. Everyone was taking photos of me crying, which was not particularly a glamorous in any way. Which is even weirder because no one could hug hug you as well. Mm. Normally, I suppose everybody would be hugging you and stuff, but I was literally stood there 2 metres away from everybody else while they took photos of me sobbing. It wasn't glamorous either.
You mentioned the distance between all the contestants, but watching the programme, you really gelled as a group, didn't you? You had Hayley doing the crochet, and you had Paul doing his woodwork, and Sheba doing carving ostrich eggs, another quite niche craft, really. But somehow you overcame the distance and really seemed to get on.
Absolutely. Yes, me and Dot are absolute best friends. We speak nearly every day. Yeah. We are completely gelled. We are like of the same tribe, completely.
Ginny's friend Hayley Shelton, who's also known as Dot, was also on the show and crocheted an adorable amigurumi reindeer head. I spoke to her too about her television experience. You can catch that in episode 22. Another TV star who spoke to me was Adam Brooks, who was one of the 12 contestants to make it through to the televised rounds of the Great British Sewing Bee. He was such a lovely guest and so enthusiastic about his love of not just sewing, but knitting too. He told me about how his love of crafts had been with him since childhood and that the pandemic had given him the chance to reconnect with them.
I got my sewing machine at about age 14. And here's a funny one for you. I'd said to my mum, for Christmas, I'd really like an overlocker. Now, if truth be told, I didn't really at that time know exactly what an overlocker could do. But I knew it was how to professionally finish up your seams on the inside. So that's why I wanted it. And I'd asked my mum for this machine. And she went, "Well, what is an overlocker?" She hadn't got a clue. And I thought, well, that was the end of that. But Mum came through, and that Christmas, I unravelled my overlocker, and that set me off making all sorts of things and using that, and making dresses. I love making frocks and things like that. And yeah, from then, really, I started training in musical theatre and love anything dramatic and musical. And that led me to my career as an entertainment director on board cruise ships. But because of working away so often, I didn't really have the chance to sit down and do much sewing. If at all, really, I hadn't touched a machine in about 15 years until last year when the pandemic hit and I was seeing all these adverts and these wonderful people on the news that were sewing scrubs. And I thought, do you know what? I've got 2 machines sat there. I could do that. So dusted them off, pulled them out and collaborated with a teacher of mine when I was at school, a lovely lady called Hina. And together, in a small group, we'd sewn a lot of scrubs. And, you know, when you first get out the machine, I'm like, oh, gosh, I really must give this an oil. And I needed to give myself an oil too because I needed some refreshing. And started to sew and sent them back and, you know, put little wash labels in them that were just handwritten at that time. And Tina says, "Adam, your scrubs have came back so professional." I says, "Oh, don't be daft." I says, "I've not sewn in 15 years. And she said to me, "Well, have you ever thought about going on the sewing bee?" And I thought, well, I love the show, but I said, I'll never get on that. And I applied at the 11th hour, to say just to humour Hina, it wasn't just that, but she was nagging me to do it in a good way. And I did it thinking I'd never stand a chance, really. And lo and behold, they got in contact with me and went through the whole process and ended up on the show. And I'm just so thankful for the experience because it's one I'll treasure forever. And it's really boosted me back into sewing and anything creative.
Do you know, it's really interesting what you said. I think so many of us who've had quite creative childhoods and have done sewing and painting and knitting and crocheting and all these different things, when our lives go down a professional route, suddenly that's something that just gets parked, isn't it? It's always there, but it's like maybe when you have your 2-week holiday in the summer, you might have a route around in your craft box and bring it back out again. But the pandemic and the fact that so many people have been stuck at home and had this time that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to reconnect with those crafts from their childhood. And I think there's been a huge one of the positives from a truly dreadful 18 months has been this huge boost in creativity, because people have needed it mentally as well as for something to fill their times. And this is just a wonderful side effect. And it's something that you've experienced yourself. That's wonderful.
I couldn't agree more. And you're so right. Like, it gave me a real purpose to get up in the morning, because not that I'm lazy. I like to get up and do stuff. I can't function without a coffee, that's for sure. But when we had so much time, we couldn't go out anywhere. And I'm sure, like you say, many people will really relate to this. Just to get up and have a project on the go and have a purpose is so important. And I think that through life, whether it's a purpose that's a creative purpose or a purpose that is in a job that you do or with family or friends, I think that's so important for people's mental health. And mental health is such a big thing. And especially, you know, being locked in four walls, not being allowed out, it's unusual times, something none of us would have ever experienced. And I'd encourage anybody, really, if in any time like that, to get creative, because it gives you that purpose. It gives you that chance to learn something new. It stimulates your brain. There's so much to be said, I think, about crafting. And like you say, it gets parked, but it's always there. It's like riding a bike. You never forget. And it's the same with a lot of the creative things that I do. In terms of textiles, has always been my thing, my joy when it comes to creativity, but particularly like sewing and knitting. And recently I got into knitting on machines, which I'd love to see a big resurgence for, because there's actually a big community of people machine knitting, as I found out during the pandemic.
Since I spoke to Adam, he's launched his own range of sewing patterns, so his craft adventure is continuing. And Adam wasn't the only male stitcher to appear on the podcast this year. Matthew Downham, a textile artist from North Wales, was my guest back in April. He spoke to me about how his practice of stitching over teddy bears had developed from drawing on paper to drawing with thread. He also told me some of his work has been exhibited as far away as the United States. You can hear Matthew's full interview, in which he discusses his experience of mental health issues and how stitching has helped him along the way, in episode 23. Now, with Christmas literally round the corner, I've come to the realisation that there are two kinds of crafters in the run-up to the festivities. There are those who are ultra-organised and may even begin their festive makes in January, and there are those who leave things until the last minute. Now, I won't say what camp I fall into, but I have an event in a few days' time which requires a Christmas jumper, and I started crocheting it last Tuesday. About a month ago, I popped along to my favourite local yarn shop, Black Sheep Wools in Warrington, and asked some of the ladies there about how their Christmas preparations were going.
I'm currently in the middle of knitting a cardigan, which is quite sparkly. It's in a Rowan yarn called Patina, and it's just a short sleeve cardigan, edge to edge with no buttons, so you could slip it over a little dress or, you know, a nice vest top or something. So I'm making that at the moment, and I'd like to do a few hats and some cowls that I bought some nice yarn for Christmas gifts.
I'm knitting a little jumper for my niece's little girl, a little Christmassy jumper. But and I've knitted another little jumper for my niece's little boy, a little baby Santa jumper. But I just tend to do one thing at a time, and then I might have quite a long gap in between.
Well, I've actually finished most of my things, I think. I've just made a few quick chunky cowls for people, and I usually get a couple of hats out of the way. And that's it, really. I don't make anything too big and tricky. But then we've just launched a new little Christmas box for making decorations. We've launched it today, actually, so I'll probably join in with a few of those, make some pretty little bits for the tree.
I'm sticking with yarn crafts for my next two highlights, and crochet in particular, which is my craft of choice. One thing both of these guests have in common was the fact that their craft has helped them cope with a really difficult chapter in their lives, one caused by ill health and the other a terrible terrorist attack which struck at the heart of her family. For Heather Griffiths, a career in law was what she'd set her sights on at a young age. It was while she was studying at university that she first picked up a crochet hook. Little did she know then that crochet and the crochet community would become so important to her and lead her to a total change in direction, to crochet design and teaching others to follow in her footsteps.
I am actually a qualified lawyer and I have been working towards that for, I don't know, 5 years of uni, however many years of work. But I actually learned to crochet during my second year of university, and it was something that I would do in between study breaks. It helps keep my hands busy and therefore my mind quite peaceful, and so I was crocheting a lot. And then when I went back to uni the second time to do my master's, I started my Instagram account because I really wanted to find people that shared my love for crochet, because my family would be like, yeah, that's nice, but they just didn't get it. So I started Instagram, and then from there it snowballed into I wanted to start YouTube, and then I was no longer just showing what I was working on, I was showing other people's patterns but my own, and then people wanted to make them. And so in August 2020 I released my first pattern, and I didn't really have any expectations, but it really took off and it really blew me away. It was absolutely great. And then I wasn't very well in December, and the job I had at the time didn't pay sick pay. You got like statutory sick pay, but not your actual wages. And so I hosted a sale on my patterns, and obviously the community really came behind me. And I just thought, you know what? I think I'm just gonna do this full time. So I actually quit my day job in January, and I've been doing this full time ever since. So it wasn't planned. I knew back in 2016 I wanted to do something crochet to pay my bills, but I couldn't have told you then what it was going to be. And then it just happened. I found how I was going to do it.
And it came along at the right time. It sounds like the community kind of just held you up at a difficult time and was there for you.
Yeah, they really did, because when you need to be getting better and then you're thinking about how am I going to be paying my bills, or that doesn't really help you sit back and relax. And over Christmas, I was near bedbound. I felt that awful. But then to know that that money was there and I was covered just really gave me that peace of mind. And then I just figured I enjoy crocheting so much, why not make it my full time? Because in my day job, I would be counting down the minutes until I could pick up my hook again, or writing down notes of things I wanted to do and put out there later on. So jumped in and here we are.
That's absolutely marvellous. What an inspiring story. I'm sure there's so many people who are listening to this who have felt like that at some point in their lives, and you know, just looking for that opportunity to turn their passion into something to do full time.
Definitely. And I think originally I was going to try and do it part-time, and there just wasn't an option with my circumstances, and so just jumped straight in. And I am very grateful to the community for such a warm welcome and all of the support, I really am.
The 22nd of May 2017 is a date which will never be forgotten by my home city of Manchester. The day terror came to what should have been a fun and happy event, an Ariana Grande concert. It touched the lives of so many people, both locally and much further afield. One of those so deeply affected by the suicide bombing was Louise Murray. Her older brother, Martin Hett, was one of the victims. In the years since the attack, Louise has found crafts have helped her heal and process what happened to her family. She's now crocheting full-time, and her business, Hooked by Lou, sells clothing and accessories she's designed and made herself.
I was just finishing my Art Foundation degree at Manchester Uni, ready to go to Leeds Uni in September to do a fashion degree. And the day before my hand-in, my brother was killed at the Manchester Arena bomb So it kind of flips your whole world upside down, and yeah, I had to drop out of uni because obviously I didn't want to leave everyone behind and be on my own and leave. I probably wasn't in the right mindset. Loads of reasons, really. Yeah, and it just kind of, until I quit my job to do crochet, I think I was in and out of different jobs trying to just find my way back onto a path of being all right again.
I can't comprehend what you've been through, and can I just say I'm so sorry for what you've experienced. How has your craft helped you in the intervening years?
It's always been something that I go to, like, anyway, whenever I'm feeling anything, just because you can kind of immerse yourself in it and forget about what's going on. And I think as well, I was spending a lot of time on my phone just after it, and everything on my, like, Facebook and Instagram feed was to do with my brother and all of his friends posting pictures, people tagging me in things, and it, all with the best intentions. But I don't want to go on my phone and every 2 seconds see pictures of my dead brother. It was a bit like, I found it really, really stressful. And I still find social media quite, I don't know, I don't like it. It's quite anxiety provoking for me. So it's nice to just sit in the evenings, put my phone down and just be in my own little world instead of just scrolling mindlessly.
Yeah, so it's so easy for somebody who's not experienced anything like you, but you can get sucked into social media, can't you?
Yeah, it's a really horrible place. I deleted Snapchat, I deleted Twitter, I'm tempted to delete Facebook. I don't really like it. I'd rather just be in my own little world. If you want to see me, give me a text and we'll meet up. There's nothing that is going on there that I can't see you in real life to talk about, or I don't like it.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate that. So crochet was your safe place that you could escape to, away from what was kind of bombarding you.
Yeah, I did whatever I could get my hands on. We had loads of beads at home, so I bought loads of little earring hooks and did that. I just sat, got all the beads out on the floor, and this is at age like 20, 21. I didn't want to be on my phone sucked into the virtual world of doom.
Yeah, quite. I can totally appreciate that. So what was it then that triggered you to decide, actually, maybe rather than just being a hobby, crochet should become much more for you and become your full-time job?
Good question. I think I've always wanted to do it since I was about 17. It's been like the dream to just sell my own clothes and do that, but I don't know, you're kind of told that you go to uni, you get a career and, you know, you do something serious rather than crochet full time. So I think I just thought that's what I had to do. And then I think obviously Corona happened. So I think there was just nothing else more to life other than getting up in the morning, going to work, coming home, getting up again, going to work. It was just a bit, I've started being really like, down, and I'd get up in the morning and cry before I got to work because I just really didn't want to go. I just wanted to come home and just do my own thing. And I just thought life's too short to be getting up in the morning and crying about going to work.
Definitely. So you took the plunge.
Yeah, I have savings. I'm quite sensible with money. I've got lots of savings. So I thought, now's probably a good time before I have kids and settle down properly. My bills are quite low because I like living cheap anyway. We're in lockdown, so I'm not spending anything. Now's a really good time to try it.
Brilliant. And how's it been so far?
It's stressful. I don't regret it one bit because I think I'm a lot happier. My partner says I'm much happier. I've got no money, but... But I'm a lot happier, definitely. If all else fails, I'm having a great summer. I can get a part-time job if I need it. I can go back to uni anytime if I want to. I'm just, for now, it's the right thing to do, and I think that's all that matters. Nothing is forever, is it?
I was really grateful to Louise for speaking so openly to me about her experiences and how craft has helped her. Louise isn't the only member of her family to have turned to craft as a way of dealing with loss. Her mother, Fegan Murray, has been knitting peace bears since 2017 to spread the message of peace and understanding. And I'm really pleased to be able to tell you that I'll be sharing a chat I've had with Fegan in the new year about her work in this field. Now, in the run-up to Christmas, I asked if any listeners would be interested in sharing their own stitch story with me for the podcast, and Kate Blackburn, who makes the most beautiful hand-stitched cards, got into contact with me. It turns out we live really close to each other, so we met up for a hot drink and a walk around the park on a rather damp afternoon a few weeks back. Here she is now.
So I make hand-stitch cards, and I've been doing that for quite a while. And how it came about, possibly because I've always made things. Much prefer stitching to other things. I'm not a natural crocheter or knitter. I've always liked stitching, and it's always been the thing that I've gone back to. So in terms of actually making cards, I was thinking about this the other day. How did I actually start doing it? And quite some years ago, I started making very rude cross-stitch gift cards for friends, which possibly can't repeat what some of them say. But that's kind of moved on to doing some stitch cards and kind of, as part of a craft group one Christmas, we were talking about what we could make as a little craft thing that kind of fits nicely into how long we had for a session. And I think it was just something on Pinterest someone found of these designs of these lovely hand-stitched cards, kind of like slightly kitsch, kind of 60s, because I think that's when they were really, really in, and that's when a lot of these designs were made. And we did them in group, and they were so easy, they were so satisfying to do, and it kind of went from there, because anybody who makes stuff, when you start having a go at a craft or making a design, the first thing you kind of think is like, this is really good, so what could I change if I did this a bit differently or that? And you end up with coming up with something totally new. So that's really where it all came from. And then you go down the rabbit hole of coming up with more and more designs, and some don't work, some do work. And I've ended up with quite a few designs that I really like and seem quite popular as well.
That's wonderful. So what kind of things do you have on your cards then, for somebody who's not seen your Instagram?
So we have a lot of rainbow colours in different stitches, geometric patterns, stars, quite a lot of stars with multicoloured concentric, is that the right word? Concentric patterns. I've got a lovely rainbow card that's very popular. We just at the minute I'm doing Christmas designs, which are based around starbursts and some nice Art Deco inspired patterns. So quite a lot of different designs. Anything that I kind of see that I quite like that I can turn into something a little bit different ends up on a card, really.
Well, that's wonderful. So you take your inspiration from anywhere?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of social media surfing probably goes into it, because then it's worthwhile. It's working then, isn't it? It's not just surfing social media, wasting your time.
Indeed. I like your way of thinking. So do you have any particular crafty wishes or crafty targets ahead of Christmas?
Ahead of Christmas, I would like to finally finish the Christmas designs, because it's very late. And I did realise that about a month ago I said to someone, I'll go on my Etsy shop by the end of the week and the Christmas cards will be on there, and they're still not, and we're about 3 weeks away from Christmas. So yes, I'd like to get them out there. Other than that, not really. I think that's about it. It's kind of on my mind that I want to have something done and then actually use the cards that I make to send to people that I know, rather than keeping them all for sales, would be quite good.
My thanks to Kate for sharing her stitch story on the podcast. I wonder if she managed to get her Christmas designs done in time. Well, that's all for part one of the Stitchmas special of 2021. As with all episodes of Making Stitches, the podcast is supported by the Making Stitches shop, where you can find Making Stitches podcast merchandise and some of my own crochet patterns, which I'll be telling you a little bit more about in the next episode. You can also support the podcast making process by buying me a coffee. You can find a link to do that in the show notes for this episode. Well, thank you very much for listening. All that remains is for me to wish you a very happy Christmas and thank you for all the wonderful support this year. I'll be back again 1 week from now on New Year's Eve with another Stitchmas special for you. Until then, stay safe, have a great Christmas and enjoy your crafting.